Welcome to the Perimenopausal Mamas Podcast for hormonal mamas who want to reclaim their own natural state of health to thrive and raise healthy kids. I'm Dr. Lisa Weeks, naturopathic doctor in Toronto, Canada. I'm a perimenopausal mama to my toddler named Stuart.
And I'm Dr. Toni Reed. I'm a naturopathic doctor, birth doula, and hypnobirthing educator in Calgary, Alberta. And I'm a perimenopausal mama to my little girl, Frankie. The information in this podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only. It is not meant to substitute professional medical advice. Always consult with your licensed healthcare provider. Welcome back, everyone, to the Perimenopausal Mamas Podcast. This is Dr. Toni, and today we are going to be talking about anxiety. You know, it's tough enough being a mom, and then throw in this past year, almost a year and a half of a pandemic. And I don't know about you guys out there. I don't know about you, Lisa. It can be rough on our mental health and it can really increase anxiety. And this has actually been researched a few different places. You know, here in Calgary, there was a study led by the University of Calgary on moms. And it showed, you know, following moms over 12 years, it showed that, you know, symptoms of anxiety were up to, you know, 31% in moms, where, you know, previously, you know, up to 2019 had been at 18%. So, you know, symptoms of anxiety has almost kind of doubled in moms overall. And there's, you know, a number of things that can go into our mental health and what you know can cause anxiety, all the things that we juggle, and we're going to talk about that. Plus, you know, ways that we can really really effectively deal with anxiety. There's some conventional approaches, but we're definitely going to give you an idea of some natural approaches to that you can really you know take the reins on your mental health and anxiety.
Definitely, Toni. Yeah, I do see, you know, numbers growing in patients in my practice and myself. I've had to incorporate some more natural therapies or techniques to keep my anxiety levels down. Cause for me, it shows up as, you know, not sleeping. I can get palpitations, but they are, you know, reporting in Canadians too. There was a survey of Canadians for the impact of COVID-19 that it was having on mental health. And 24% of respondents reported fair or poor mental health compared to in 2018, when that number was 8%, 52% indicated that their mental health was either somewhat worse or much worse since physical distancing began. No surprise, right? And then 88% experienced at least one symptom of anxiety in the 2 weeks prior. So the symptoms were, you know, 71% of those were feeling nervous, anxious, or on edge. 69% were becoming easily annoyed or irritable. And 64% had trouble relaxing. So I know when I'm getting close to, you know, mental stress and not handling stress, I, you know, become more annoyed. I might snap at Pete a little bit more. My son Stuart, I get more irritable. Or I feel like there's no time, right? It's that feeling of just never enough time and rushing and just not being able to turn off at night.
Absolutely. And yeah, again, you know, we're all kind of in this same boat where we're experiencing, can be experiencing more issues with anxiety and mental health. And then add, you know, being in perimenopause and with fluctuating hormones, that can make us more sensitive and can kind of create some of these symptoms of anxiety. But why don't we talk about, you know, what are some of the, you know, go through the symptoms of anxiety? What really is anxiety? Mm-hmm. And I know, you know, the American Psychiatry Association really refers to anxiety as the anticipation of a future concern. And it is more associated with muscle tension and avoidance behavior. And it's important to kind of note that, you know, anxiety disorders do differ from normal feelings of nervousness or anxiousness. So there is, you know, you can experience symptoms of anxiety without, you know, that diagnosis of an anxiety disorder. But, you know, this is where looking at, you know, the extent of, you know, how you're experiencing these symptoms and how it affects your life is really important. You know, this is where, you know, if you are having kind of three or more anxiety symptoms for a period of six consecutive months on an almost daily basis, you may be diagnosed with a generalized anxiety disorder. And this is where there's two different kind of categories of symptoms that you may experience. So there's kind of the mental emotional symptoms, where you may be experiencing fear or irritability, restlessness, inability to relax, difficulty concentrating, or even decreased emotionality or a decreased libido. Then there's also kind of the body symptoms, the somatic symptoms, where you can be experiencing, you know, increased or you know, really increased shallow breathing or increased heart rate or arrhythmia, nausea, sweating, tremor, increased urination, increased appetite, or you may be experiencing diarrhea or vertigo. You know, there's, and there can even be increased sensitivity to pain. So there's kind of those two different categories of how you're kind of feeling, but also what's happening in your body.
Definitely. So it's important to recognize, especially if those are longer term symptoms and you have, you know, three or more of those, to definitely seek out, you know, professional support through a psychologist, psychotherapist, even a naturopathic doctor to support with natural treatments. But we also want to recognize too, there is postpartum anxiety, which I suffered from. And that can show up as, you know, some of the symptoms that you mentioned, Tony. So there can be worry, dread, racing thoughts, lack of concentration, you know, changes in your sleeping, eating. For me, I had a rapid heartbeat. I had extra beats and I actually had a Holter monitor and that was picked up. I was having trouble sleeping, and women can also suffer from hot flashes, dizziness, and nausea. So we're going to look at, you know, what causes anxiety, and we'll be talking about anxiety in general as well as anxiety disorders. And of course, if it's an anxiety disorder, you want to seek out more individualized supports. Even if it is anxiety, you still want to consult with someone to make sure the changes you're making are safe for you as well. But we're going to go through some of the causes and then what you can do about it. But we see, I think, so many patients in our practice, Tony, during perimenopause, where women said, you know, I never really felt anxious before, but wow, now I, you know, feel stressed about everything. Like I'm worried about, you know, my health, my kids' health, my job, you know, throw in the pandemic, that heightens all of that. And we know the hormonal changes do happen in perimenopause, but for women who actually manifest with anxiety and or depression, it's the actual brain's response to those hormones that's not favorable, if you will, because those hormone fluctuations are to be expected, but some women's brains can just respond to it more negatively than another woman. And we know that if there has been previous mental health issues, then they're going to have an increased risk of mental health issues in perimenopause and menopause. So even if you've had postpartum anxiety or depression or episodes earlier in life, you can have an increased risk. And about 18% of women in early menopause suffer from anxiety, and 38% of those in late perimenopause, these are both perimenopause numbers, suffer from anxiety and depression. So these do become more common leading up to menopause, including panic attacks.
Definitely. And you know, with that kind of increased sensitivity to hormonal shifts, you know, it really is individual. So, you know, something that you have to look at when, you know, when we're looking at causes of anxiety is, you know, what's really going on around you, specific situations, you know, like a pandemic or changes in work, changes in your home life. And also, you know, something to really be aware of is how our individual genetics and biochemistry can play a role in increasing your susceptibility or your predisposition to having having any kind of anxiety, especially when we're looking at different genes that will select for different enzyme systems and hormone pathways. There can be, you know, for example, there's a polymorphism called the COMT, C-O-M-T, which breaks down dopamine and estrogen. And some people, that's just more efficient than other people. So when there is issues with that, those breakdown products that can have an ability on, you know, the amount of neurotransmitters, your neurotransmitter balance, and that can make you more susceptible to things like anxiety.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's definitely important to investigate. And some patients don't realize maybe some medications they're taking, or, you know, alcohol, cocaine, well, that could be obvious, but caffeine can be aggravating their anxiety or inducing it even in some cases. So we definitely know alcohol, caffeine, for some people, if they're, you know, not using cannabis correctly, go back and listen to our previous episode. That may be a factor, but it is a treatment as well for anxiety. Cocaine can trigger anxiety. Amphetamines, corticosteroids, especially oral, hallucinogenics, anticholinergic drugs may be used for people with, you know, bladder issues, for example. Even some of the antidepressants can have anticholinergic effects. So these may induce anxiety. These are drug-induced causes of anxiety. And then we know medical conditions can also trigger anxiety. So we've talked a lot about thyroid. So if you're hyperthyroid, anxiety is a huge symptom of that. Even hypo, though, if you're really, you know, tired and burnt out and have Hashimoto's, for example, you can experience more anxiety. We know that low blood sugar, hypoglycemia, actually triggers the release of cortisol, your stress hormone, because your body's trying to free up glucose from your muscles and your liver. So that can throw off the stress response and contribute to anxiety. If your heart's not working properly, there's heart failure or arrhythmia, you're not going to get the blood and the nutrients delivered to your brain and your tissues. So that can trigger anxiety. Lung issues like chronic obstructive pulmonary disorder, again, it's going to impact your breathing, your oxygen levels. That can trigger anxiety. We know different nutrient deficiencies. So as naturopathic doctors, we commonly look at B12 levels, iron. You know, most people are deficient in magnesium, so they may not be tested for that, but we usually prescribe magnesium when there is anxiety, inflammation in the brain, encephalitis, whether it's infection triggered or maybe from an accident, for example. And then things such as post-traumatic stress disorder. So if you've had any trauma that hasn't been addressed, if you've seen a loved one pass away, for example. So these are all things that can trigger anxiety.
Absolutely. And, you know, there's, especially when we're talking about nutrient deficiencies, can make such a huge impact on your mental health and any tendency for anxiety. So we'll definitely be talking about some of those nutrients when it comes to a natural approach, a naturopathic approach to dealing with anxiety. Again, potentially a lot of you are already familiar with, you know, what a conventional approach to anxiety would be. And typically that would be, you know, prescription medications, you know, usually one or even a combination of an SSRI, antidepressant, anti-anxiety medication, you know, something, or even a benzodiazepine as well. So there's, you know, there's a few different ones that, you know, may be prescribed, especially when it comes to an SSRI, like potentially something like escitalopram, paroxetine, sertraline. Those can often be prescribed for anxiety, whether it's generalized anxiety disorder or social anxiety, panic, PTSD, even, you know, obsessive compulsive disorder or OCD. You know, something like an SSRI and also the benzodiazepines like clonazepam, lorazepam, diazepam, you know, they do have their benefits and their drawbacks. There can definitely be disadvantages, side effects, nutrient depletions. Something like a benzodiazepine, we know they used to be prescribed much more frequently because they're quite quick acting. And it's really important that they're only used for short-term anxiety or insomnia and used to the lowest effective dose. There are a lot of potential side effects and disadvantages when it comes to creating dependence, withdrawal, having a number of different side effects like drowsiness, fatigue, headaches, really cognitive impairment and an increased risk of falls. They can be really quite hard on the body and quite difficult to come off of if you start using them on a regular basis. That can also be a bit of a issue when it comes to SSRIs. You know, one of the big disadvantages for SSRIs can be an impact on your sexual function, your libido, and an ability to orgasm, but there's also can be impacts on your digestive function, insomnia, and again, really is important if you're looking to come off to really taper slowly and wean off slowly. There also may be almost a worsening of symptoms in the first couple weeks it was on starting an SSRI. So it can be really challenging to start one to see what kind of effect it will be and to even look at, you know, is, you know, the getting on the right one for you, because everyone again will have a different reaction to those.
Mm-hmm, definitely. And it's looking at, when we're looking at the medications, it's working on the brain neurotransmitter level. And that may be one cause or contributing factor, but we're now realizing, you know, inflammation in the brain can be a driver for anxiety, depression, and mood disorders. We're realizing that chronic stress dysregulation in what's called the HPA axis, the hypothalamus pituitary adrenal gland axis, can definitely be a contributor or driver for anxiety too. So these medications may help people, but, you know, for example, some of the medications in depression have a 50% effective rate. Some of the anti-anxiety medications too. So it's not potentially addressing, you know, all of the root causes if there's more than just the neurotransmitter imbalance going on. And we're realizing, yes, maybe neurotransmitters, you know, play a role, but some of these other factors may be bigger contributors or drivers to mood disorders. So you want to investigate from all levels for sure. I mean, when we get into testing, we can touch a little bit about on how to look at some of those levels as well. But yeah, just being cautious of the side effects of the medication. Go ahead, Tony.
Oh, for sure. And you know, also looking at how some of the medications can also cause their own nutrient depletions as well, that a lot of people are not aware of when they are prescribed those kind of medications. So, again, it can create more issues for some people than others. But again, it is great to have those kind of options available. It really is about, you know, looking at, you know, what's going to work best for you. And, you know, even when we're taking a more of a naturopathic approach to anxiety, a lot of what we do is ask the question why, and really look at, again, like you said, Lisa, addressing the root cause. So that's where, for sure, getting you feeling better is important, but also, can you really reduce why you're experiencing that anxiety, and really help your body to have some of the resilience to manage that on its own. My concern is always, you know, when it comes to whether it's supplements or medications, if you take it away, you know, does things go back to the way they were, or do things shift? And that's something to really look at.
Definitely.
And that's where, again, testing can really make a difference with really figuring out, why do you have anxiety? Where is your anxiety coming from? And what are the factors that you really need to look at?
Mm-hmm, for sure. Yeah. For me, yeah, we can get into the testing in a moment, but I'll just share for me, you know, I did suffer from postpartum anxiety and it was multifactorial why, you know, it manifested in me. And sometimes it can just be, you know, those hormone changes. I don't want to say just, but those hormone changes can be enough to be, you know, the straw that broke the camel's back. For me, it was multifactorial. So, you know, first of all, I wasn't sleeping because I was on this breastfeeding and pumping regime. So I, you know, was getting just a few, you know, maybe 4 to 5 hours sleep per night over a prolonged period of time. I went back to work part-time when Stuart was only 2.5 months old. So I had this idea of trying to do everything I was doing before having him while still trying to be a mom and feed him and keep him alive. You know, there was the perfectionism tendencies, the comparison to other moms, like, wow, look at, they're doing all these things. They're making these perfect photo albums. I barely have time to eat and have a shower. And I know for some moms, that's their reality too, but we sometimes just see the highlights. I did have a thyroid condition as well that was addressed. You know, I worked through seeing a therapist as well to address my mom guilt for going back to work so early. So it was multifactorial and I got cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia because yes, I wasn't sleeping and that contributed to postpartum anxiety. But then eventually once that was settled, I still had a hard time sleeping. So I needed to address that as well. So it was multifactorial for me. And I was, as I mentioned, getting heart palpitations too. And in the past, I know I've suffered from, you know, anxiety on and off. I wouldn't necessarily classify it as a disorder, but I know when I can't sleep or I've gone through periods of gastritis, you know, I'm sure things that I was doing lifestyle-wise weren't helping it either, but in stress, it can affect my, or anxiety can affect my gut too. I also can suffer from some skin rashes when I am suffering from anxiety. So I can get these different manifestations in my body, but luckily I have the tools for the most part that I know need to be in place for it to not manifest in something more severe. But Tony, what's been your experience with anxiety, if you don't mind sharing?
For sure. Well, you know, especially with the pandemic, I think the idea of anxiety and experiencing some anxiety and symptoms of anxiety has really come up more for me now. And it makes me think back to when I had Frankie and was unable to fall asleep, you know, even when I was exhausted, or again, just kind of always on edge, worrying about, you know, what I was doing, what she was doing. So looking back, it's like, oh, okay, you know, I was experiencing some anxiety. I've always kind of had the tendency to be a little bit more on the anxious side, or, you know, we used to call it more, a little bit more high strung. So I do have that tendency for myself. And then bringing the pandemic into this whole everything that you're juggling and what I've been juggling as a mom and working and dealing with all of these changes and uncertainties. It's like, yeah, definitely anxiety can definitely come up. So absolutely, I've definitely needed to step up my game in terms of my self-care, in terms of making sure that I'm really getting that sleep, because sleep has always been number one for me. Looking at my nutrition, looking at how I'm managing my day-to-day, and also my expectations of, you know, what the house looks like, or just, you know, what I can get done during the day. So these are all pieces where I really feel like I'm just more aware of, you know, what is on my plate and how that impacts me. And we'll definitely be talking about some different approaches to really look at for yourself in terms of, you know, what can impact you as well. I think testing is a real key as a foundation to see, you know, what are some of those nutrients and what is your biochemistry doing, you know, especially for me, iron has always been an issue, you know, having running on a little bit lower of iron, not, you know, a real anemia, but not necessarily an optimal amount of iron. And sometimes, you know, absolutely being low on the reference ranges for iron testing through the blood. So that can be really key. Like you said, Lisa, having a thyroid panel done through the blood work. And again, we can definitely link back in our show notes to our thyroid episode. That can just make a huge impact in anxiety and you know your overall mental health and energy levels. So those are definitely some lab tests to look at right off the bat. I also will sometimes look at organic acid testing with some of my patients. There are some markers in the Dutch urine hormone testing that we've talked about before. And that can be helpful as well to kind of look at where people are at and even some of the genetic testing that can be done. Like I mentioned, you know, if you do have that tendency in your genes to have, you know, different balances of neurotransmitters and hormones, that can make you more susceptible.
Definitely. So those are some great tests, and the organic acids test can give you an idea of where your neurotransmitter levels are too. That Dutch test can tell you about your hormones. So that can be definitely playing a role too. So those are key. You know, you may want to get your B12 levels tested because that can impact your mood and brain health. Even with low vitamin D, people can just feel off. Mm-hmm. So that can be an aggravating factor for anxiety. If your body doesn't have the nutrients it needs, that's a stressor on your body. And then your body can't function in the way it's supposed to and respond to stressors in your environment appropriately. So that's also really important to check out. And then there's different questionnaires based on whether you're postpartum, or there's the Beck anxiety questionnaire, where you can get a sense of how you rate. And some people do these questionnaires, and then as they get treatment or make changes, they may revisit them and see, okay, how have these actual symptoms changed? Am I noticing an improvement? So try to make it you know, having sort of that objectiveness to it when sometimes it's hard to track from the mental emotional level. So those are some great ways to look at what needs to be tested. And then looking at what can you do to support someone who's suffering with anxiety, whether it's yourself, what could somebody else do? So we definitely want to reduce those, you know, potential triggers that were medical conditions or drug induced. So for me, I know I'm really sensitive to caffeine, so I can get away with tea. But if I have coffee, my heart's going to be racing. I'm going to feel like I'm running, you know, a marathon, or, you know, my brain is going before my body, like it's on this race. And I've had so many patients and even people in my life who, if they switched to decaf or half decaffeinated, half caffeinated, that made a world of difference for their anxiety. I think that's underlooked for a lot of people. Alcohol as well can trigger anxiety for several reasons, right? Because it can lower your blood sugar while you're sleeping, or, you know, several hours after having an alcoholic drink. It depletes your magnesium, your B vitamins, nutrients that you need to reduce anxiety and reduce stress hormones in the body. You know, it's a toxin. It adds to inflammation. Your body's processing something that it's really not supposed to be processing. And we know it impacts our mood negatively too. So definitely look at caffeine and alcohol intake and see how that can be modified at a level you're comfortable with. Definitely prioritizing sleep. And if you can't sleep, seek out a naturopathic doctor, a healthcare professional, to figure out why, so that you can start to sleep better, because you're going to release more cortisol, the stress hormone, when you're not getting enough sleep or good quality sleep. And I think we all know, if you don't sleep, I'm definitely going to feel more anxious the next day.
Absolutely. We'll definitely, in our show notes, link to our latest sleep episode that, you know, we just dive in a bit deeper in terms of really looking at all of the things that you can do to help to get the best sleep possible. And like you, Lisa, you know, I know that I'm a slow metabolizer of caffeine. I know that I'm more sensitive to sugar when it came, you know, with my genetics. So absolutely looking at those triggers for, you know, anxiety is really important. Also really learning what triggers that you may have, kind of situational. If you tend to get really anxious about running late or anxious about not sleeping enough, or even, you know, one that had previously been the case for me is, you know, not having enough snacks or worrying about being hungry, then it is about, you know, looking at, can you reduce your exposure to those triggers? Can you avoid what's avoidable? But then also potentially practice what is unavoidable and practice what you need to experience in terms of your triggers. And again, this is where especially, support and professional support for that can be really, really helpful with a psychologist who really, you know, looks at supporting people specifically with anxiety disorders. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Tony. I'm sorry if I cut you off.
No, that's okay. I wanted to make sure that I wasn't cutting you off either, Lisa.
Oh, no, all good.
Okay, good.
We're so polite. We're such Canadians.
We totally are. And then, you know, something that you can really do on your own is to really, you know, look at naming the feeling that you're experiencing and leaning into that feeling. And this is where, you know, the acronym RAIN can be really helpful, to recognize what you're experiencing, to allow it, to just let it be, not feel like you need to fix it or avoid it or ignore it, but to just let it be, acknowledge it, and even breathe into it. Breathing can be a really helpful technique when it comes to managing any anxiousness. Investigate. So really looking at, you know, how is your body feeling? What are the physical feelings in your body? What's the self-talk? What are the thoughts going on? What are the beliefs going on? And even really looking at what do you need most in that moment? And looking at nurturing yourself, can you talk to yourself more like a friend instead of like a critic? Can you really start to direct some self-compassion to yourself? So I really love that acronym of RAIN to really start to practice and be with any feelings or thoughts of anxiety to really start to shift things and turn things around.
Yeah, it's so powerful. Like, how often do we say to other people when they're feeling anxious, calm down, or to ourselves, we're like, oh, why am I feeling anxious? I just have to push through. But it's that, yeah, RAIN, the recognize, allow, investigate, and nurture. So this is from the work of Tara Brock. She has some great online meditations working through the RAIN as well when you're feeling various emotions or working through different situations. And it's so powerful. And now I'm really trying to, when I'm feeling anxious, just journal about it. So give it an actual name, like, oh, there's Annie anxiety. Sorry for any Annies out there. It's nothing personal. But giving it a name and a color. And like, so maybe it's red and it's a tightening in my chest and it's, you know, a heart racing. So just really giving it these qualities that are outside of myself and distancing it from me, saying, you know, I'm feeling anxious, not I am anxious. And just exploring where that's coming from. And, you know, oh, do I feel like I'm going to blow this podcast and I'm going to look like I don't know what I'm talking about. And then it's stepping back and saying, well, you know, you've done a lot of podcasts, you've done research, you're prepared. Where are those thoughts coming from? And then looking at, you know, what do you really need in that moment? Is it, oh, I'm overworked and tired, I really need a rest, and talking to yourself like a friend. So that can be really, really powerful, right? And then as you mentioned, Tony, the breath is so powerful. So once we work through some of those emotions and acknowledge them, I like to think of doing things to change my state. Because yes, you might need to perform, you know, I might have a minute to write down how I'm feeling with the anxiety, but it's like, okay, I have a online consultation right now with a patient. I got to be back on. Like, this can't last forever. So then it's, what can I do to change my state quickly? So we know activating the vagus nerve really helps to stimulate our parasympathetic nervous system, which is the gatekeeper of our rest and digest, tend and mend nervous system. So something as simple as splashing your face with cold water or taking 10 deep breaths where your exhalation is longer than your inhalation. The studies are showing with diaphragmatic breathing that the longer exhalation, so you might inhale for 4 counts, maybe you'll hold it or not for a few counts, you'll exhale for 6 or 7 counts. So it's a longer exhalation. They have studied this and it does decrease negative affect compared to baseline. It does lower levels of salivary cortisol significantly. This was over 8 weeks of practice when participants were practicing twice a day, this diaphragmatic breathing with the longer exhalation. I believe it was 10 to 20 minutes each session, but even a minute here and there can add up, right? And you can really feel a sense of calm, just focusing on your breath, focusing on something, you know, after you've worked through what's going on in your mind, something in your physical body. And if you feel anxious, focusing on your breath, sometimes people can when they're anxious, it might be like, okay, what do my feet feel like on the ground? What sounds do I hear right now? What smells can I detect? So it's just using some of your senses to ground you in the present moment, because we know with anxiety, our brain can be going a mile a minute and we're anticipating a lot of these things. So the power of the breath can be useful. So splashing cold water on your face, doing some deep breathing, humming. I love doing a chanting meditation in the morning, or humming while you're in the shower or out for a walk. That can activate the vagus nerve, because the vagus nerve passes behind the lungs and the vocal cord. So anything that kind of vibrates or causes changes in those areas stretches it and can help help calm the nervous system, if you will. So things as simple as that, and even practicing gratitude and loving kindness, sending loving kindness towards others, can be a positive practice as well.
Yeah, I love that. And, you know, that kind of the longer exhalation breathing that you were talking about, Lisa, that absolutely is part of some of the breathing techniques that we do with hypnobirthing and hypnomothering, in terms of really tapping into the kind of hormones and response that we want to support in pregnancy and even afterwards, of really supporting your endorphins, your pain-killing hormones, supporting your oxytocin, your love hormone, your bonding hormone, and that's kind of important for labor too. So that's really key. Another way of really, you know, minimizing and almost kind of, you know, releasing or discharging your adrenaline and your cortisol can be moving your body. So that can be another quick way to kind of interrupt. If you are experiencing any anxiety on a quick basis. So, you know, whether you're just get up and walk around or do a quick jumping jack or something like that, and moving your body on a regular basis and exercise has shown with research overall to help to support mental health, to reduce anxiety, to reduce depression. And of course, I always find that you know, an extra bonus would be to get outside, you know, get some fresh air, get some vitamin D, get into nature, or, you know, just even walking to pay attention to the trees and the flowers and the plants around you, can make a huge impact on your nervous system and really bring you into more of that relaxed state.
Definitely. That can have a huge shift in your stress hormones, your heart rate and blood pressure, just by getting out, moving your body, just getting a different perspective on things. And a big trigger for me to feel anxious is multitasking. So who doesn't have, you know, too much on their plate? And sometimes I'm trying to watch or listen to, you know, a recording online of a session of something I want to learn about while I'm trying to email at the same time and do a million things. But they do study this. They have studied this as well at the University of California. They did a study and they showed that multitasking increased stress hormones. It reduced feelings of achievement and meaningfulness. It increased heart rates and people felt more wired up. It reduced the brain density in areas dealing with cognition and emotional control. So you're going to not have that regulation. And it actually reduced IQ up to 15 points. So this is really having a negative impact on our brain, on our stress hormones, on our feelings of being, you know, productive and making a meaningful impact. And I don't know about you, but when I multitask, I make mistakes and have to go back and it ends up being more work. So I always have to remind myself, focus on one thing at a time. And then there's that, not that overstimulation.
Absolutely. And then physically, you know, we've already kind of talked about how balancing our blood sugar can be really important. And so really looking at nutrition to really slow down that release of sugar into your bloodstream and really keep your blood sugar levels more stable is key. And we can definitely link to our podcast episode that really focuses more on blood sugar to prevent those kind of anxiety like hypoglycemic symptoms, those spikes and crashes in your blood sugar. Also looking at inflammation and, you know, again, you mentioned Lisa, how inflammation can impact our brain function and our mood. So looking at, you know, foods that do have a pro-inflammatory effect in our body, you know, things like sugar, things like alcohol. But for some people, again, gluten may be pro-inflammatory, dairy may be pro-inflammatory, really looking at doing a proper assessment of food sensitivities can also make a huge difference in reducing how inflammation can fuel anxiety in your body.
Definitely. And then, you know, there's a whole host of herbs and supplements that we use, again, based on, you know, the cause and your triggers as well. But you may have heard of things like GABA, glycine. These are things that stop like excitatory neurotransmitters. So they're calming to our nervous system. So they can help to reduce anxiety. L-theanine as well is another one that's naturally found in green, black, and white tea. So it's what kind of counteracts that stimulating or a caffeine effect that can contribute to you feeling stressed out. The L-theanine takes the edge off and affects your dopamine and GABA levels. And it gets you into the Zen brain waves, the alpha brain waves. So, you know, you could feel good after a nice cup of tea or taking some theanine as a supplement form. And then we do know, you know, magnesium is a huge one for anxiety. Even it's been studied, you know, in a whole host of studies. And I think we're going to do an episode just on magnesium because it's so important. But they've studied it, especially with vitamin B6, to reduce PMS anxiety and generalized anxiety disorder in women. And Tony also mentioned the inflammation, and we know inflammation is a driver, and we know omega-3 fatty acids can really reduce norepinephrine levels, support dopamine and stress tolerance, and be anxiolytic too. So reducing anxiety, so getting in healthy sources of wild caught salmon, anchovies, sardines, herring, taking a supplemental fish oil or algae oil if you're a vegan or vegetarian can also make a huge difference.
Absolutely. There's so many different herbs that can impact, how we experience anxiety in different ways. We've definitely talked about adaptogen herbs before when it comes to stress, you know, ashwagandha, rhodiola, Eleutherococcus or Siberian ginseng can be really helpful. We've definitely talked about relaxing teas like lemon balm, tulsi, chamomile, passion flower, lavender, ikava. There's so many different herbs and nutrients that can be helpful depending on, you know, what your particular experience of anxiety and what can really work for you. So there's a number of things to really look at. If hormones are involved as well, something I always keep in mind is chasteberry or Vitex can be really helpful for some women. And even, you know, some women who may really benefit from a bioidentical hormone replacement or bioidentical progesterone. For some women, that can be very beneficial when it comes to that calming effect in the body.
Yeah, progesterone can really support GABA. It's kind of our chill out hormone. It helps us sleep and feel nice and calm. And then lavender is a big one as well. So they've studied oral lavender compared to lorazepam, so a benzodiazepine in the treatment of general anxiety disorder. And 40% of the lavender group went into remission compared to 27% of the lorazepam group. Again, check with your healthcare professional to make sure this is safe for you. But even people notice a benefit doing inhalation therapy with lavender, you know, in a diffuser, for example, or having nice creams with lavender in them, or putting some lavender into the bath can make a difference. And even some of the teas, I have a favorite Tulsi with lavender tea, and I find that just like really takes the edge off and really helps me to feel grounded as well. And then ashwagandha, a lot of people have heard about as the adaptogenic herb, right? So it can actually reduce the anxiety effects of our norepinephrine. So that's stimulating short-term stress hormone too. So all of these have been, you know, studied, but again, it's not a one size fits all. Definitely see your healthcare practitioner to be sure what's safe and effective for you.
So I think we covered our naturopathic approach to anxiety pretty much, Lisa. What do you think?
I think so too. So awesome. Let's move on to the next part of the podcast. So I think you have a really good super mom moment, Tony, that you could share with us.
Well, last week here in Western Canada, specifically, you know, in Alberta and Calgary, we were having a crazy heat wave, record-breaking temperatures, and it lasted all week. And I was really looking at, okay, how can we manage this heat wave? I just made it work where we could escape the heat wave. We managed to go to grandma's house, especially since we had, you know, been there before, and we were able to hang out in the backyard with, you know, sprinklers and pool, but also the basement, which was nice and cool compared to our house in Calgary. So it was wonderful. I'm so glad that it worked out, and it coincided with not only like my regular days off, but also with the Canada Day holiday here in Canada. So that was fantastic. By the time we had to head back home, it was already starting to cool down in Calgary. We had some lovely rain, and so I was just really, really, really thankful that it all worked out so that, you know, it was less miserable for me and for everyone, especially Frankie too.
Nice. That reminded me of the saying, if you can't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen. So that may apply for anxiety too, if there's situations you just need to get out of. But I think that's awesome. You just like picked up, got out of there. Cause yeah, I don't know how you can survive without air conditioning. We're so used to so many heat waves here in Toronto and Ontario that, hats off to you for pushing through and then making a change.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, you know, air conditioning is definitely less common here in Calgary. I think it's becoming more and more common because of climate change. But anyway, we definitely were able to get out of the kitchen. Nice. And now, Lisa, I know you are an amazing mom, but do you happen to have a mama mess up that you could share with us this week?
Yes, I do. So, well, we were on vacation. So we were up at the cottage, which was great. So Stuart got to sleep in the bunk beds, which he has before. And, you know, there's in his bed at home, we still have like a little barrier up so he doesn't roll out of his bed just for reason. We just didn't feel like taking it off because we're like, he's sleeping really well. You know, why change anything right now? So, but he at the cottage, he slept in the bunk bed with no barrier and he didn't fall out of the bed. So we're like, okay, we'll just take it off now. No big deal. It's an easy transition. So we took it off the first night, but then in the middle of the night we heard boom, and we have no carpet on Stuart's floor. It's just hardwood floor, and I didn't think of putting some pillows down, some blankets down to break his fall. So he had a pretty hard fall on the ground. He wasn't crying. I tried to convince him to put pillows and blankets on the floor in the middle of the night, but he was kind of half asleep and was really against it. But so he hasn't fallen again. I think it's been two or three nights now, so fingers crossed he'll be okay. But I didn't have that foresight to protect because I didn't feel like it was necessary. Whoops.
Oh. Oh no. Well, you know, what can you do? Sometimes it's just going to happen. You know, sometimes you get out of bed, on the wrong foot or not even on your feet.
Oh, but he was okay, luckily. So lesson learned. Yeah.
Lesson learned. And again, it all worked out.
It all worked out. So all good. But Tony, what's your mama must have for the week?
My mama must have, especially, you know, talking about anxiety and mental health. My mama must have is really carving out some solo time, some alone time. For me, what has made the biggest positive impact on my mental health is carving out some time for doing a personal development seminar online. I've been doing a living passionately online seminar through Landmark Worldwide, and it has made such a huge impact. Of course, you know, what's really important for me in terms of my mental health is sleep and getting outside and walking and again, my supplement regime and some of those nutrients that we already mentioned for anxiety. But what has also really been key for me with this kind of personal development is actually looking at, you know, helping me recognize, like, what have I been resisting in my life? What I haven't been accepting, you know, what are those shoulds, you know, that I've been shoulding myself with, and being able to just let those go. And it has had such a huge reduction in my stress. It has really improved my mood and really given me more appreciation for my day to day as well. So, that's my mama must have for the week.
I love it. That's a huge one. So taking that time and really putting that time and energy into that personal development. It sounds amazing. So I can't wait to hear more about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely highly recommended. How about you, Lisa?
Yeah, I think starting my day off on the right foot, I used to wake up and, you know, check email right away, check the news. And man, if that doesn't provoke anxiety, I don't know what does. But I really curate my morning, you know, and, you know, do a workout. And then after dropping Stuart off, I'll come home and do a 5-minute gratitude journal where I write down, okay, what will make today great? What was great about yesterday? I have a few other questions I ask myself. It's really quick. I really, you know, try to write down ease and light. I want to approach my day with ease and light and press the easy button where possible, you know, not to be lazy, but just what can I do to make my life a little easier? Because I used to feel like I had to make things so complicated. And then also just being sure to do like a meditation, 5-10 minutes. I've been doing a chanting meditation for a while, actually since the US election, because there was this online Facebook group that was doing it to support people with all the stress that was going on around that. But that helps to activate my vagus nerve. So really curating my morning and not taking on the stress and anxiety of the world, you know, first thing, if that's not necessary.
I love that, Lisa. That is a really great must have for all those mamas out there too.
Thanks. And Tony, what do you have going on? What's coming up for you?
What's coming up for me actually just in a few days is my next hypnobirthing info session, where I really share with expecting parents different techniques for hypnobirthing to decrease that fear and anxiety around labor and birth. So my next one is happening on July 11th. You can join me by going to hypnobirthingcalgary.com/register.
Very timely. You? Great.
Yeah, definitely. How about you, Lisa?
Yeah, I'm really excited for the fall launch coming up of the Wild Collective Toronto. So I think it's so needed to build community and connection, but also get an empowered health curriculum. So get on the wait list at wildcollectivetoronto.com. My feedback from my existing groups has blown me away and the transformations have been amazing. So we'll link to that as well.
That's awesome, Lisa. So thanks for everyone. Thanks for joining us today. Again, you can find our show notes at our website, perimenopausalmamas.com. You can also connect with us on Facebook and Instagram. We'd love for you to subscribe. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review and a 5-star rating and tell your perimenopausal mama friends about us too.
Stay safe and healthy, everyone. Until next time.